There we go. We have two tricks here, right? We make, that's already up. I make this to 150. And then we hide these guys, right? I gotta hide them over here. That's the, how's that? Good? Excellent. Okay, so I'm gonna take 2 minutes just to summarize some important points from last time. Number one, on this question of multi variables or single variables about how we're gova. So I think the Gemara is very clear that on the assumption that we're gova lefi mamon, there's for sure it's sad that it's a single variable. Meaning if you think the Gaius is coming to attack mamon, then the exclusive variable for determining the tax is people's net worth. Obviously, there are machloksim. If you look in Siman Kuf Samach Gimel, it's on the source sheet. There's machloksim how to evaluate someone's next net worth, karka, metalkalin, debts owed to them, money that they're investing in somebody else's. But if you assume lefi mamon, that could be an exclusive factor, right? The sole variable. That's number one. Just want to explain this single variable consideration for taxes. I think you definitely have that in the lefi mamon side. Now, if it's lefi nefashos, I think here you have two deos in the Rishonim. So the Rishonim, based off the Sugya Bava Kama Kuf Tes Zayin, where the Gemara talks about the Shayara that's traveling in the Midbar, if it's just a monetary threat, they pay lefi mamon. If there's also nefashos, they have to hire a guide to guide them through the dangerous territories or whatever, then it's, the Gemara says, af lefi nefashos. And that seems to suggest a lot of Rishonim that the nefashos side is really a multivariable consideration. Right, you're going to have some consideration for nefashos and some consideration for lefi mamon. But there are some Rishonim in our sugya, in Baba Basra, who seem to discuss lefi nefashos as a sole criterion, at least in some cases, as the sole variable.
Okay, so there's a lefi mamon discussion. But then the lefi nefashos, interesting question whether it's af lefi nefashos or exclusively lefi nefashos.
From the Rishonim we saw in the last year, the Chibas HaRashba, discussing the case of the, you know, the pogrom or the attack on the Jewish community, or a case where they have to bribe the officials to allow them to purchase their own bread and wine and shechita. There, the Rashba said that it should be exclusively lefi nefashos. Why? Eitan? Exactly. The rich person's not buying necessarily more bread than the poor person. We saw the Piskei Tshuva, so that's got to, that empirical assumption has to be adequate. It has to be true that the rich person is not buying more goods than the poor person. But if that's the case, then you're gova lefi nefashos, correct? And I think the Nemuka Yosef in our sugya had a language that implied a similar view. He did not say af lefi nefashos, as the other Rishonim said. The Nemuka Yosef in our sugya said, "Im yodua shohais the ball iske nefashos mechashvim lefi nefashos." We know that the Gaius is coming for nefashos, then the calculation is lefi nefashos. So I took that as saying that that's a single variable consideration. Now, I want to distinguish between two different ways of talking about lefi nefashos. Sorry, I'm going to come back to that in a second. You have a similar question about the single variable versus multivariable when we talk about Kirub Batin. Most Rishonim, Tosos, and the Rimi Gash, Udi Imam, say that when the Gemara says Lefi Kirub Batin, it's Af Lefi Kirub Batin. So it's some multivariable analysis where you analyze a person's wealth in conjunction with the proximity to the law. Yes, everybody agree with that analysis? Right, so it's Af Lefi Kirub Batin. There were some Rishonim who disagreed, namely the Rambam and the Yad Rama, said that according to the Tzadis Lefi Kirub Batin, it's Rak Lefi Kirub Batin. Okay, so you have a similar machlokas about the this consideration of proximity to the wall. Okay. Yes, everyone okay with that? All right. I should say it's actually not so obvious how exactly to set up the calculation. You know, like all the Rishonim say, an Ashir Rachok from the Kosel will pay more than an Ani Karov. I'm pretty sure they all said that, but they don't really set up where's the equilibrium point, right? So It does sound like they're weighing a person's, I mean, for the multivariable Rishonim, they're weighing Lifi Mamon greater than they're weighing Lifi Kirabatim. It's just interesting to figure out why that should be the case. But I just noticed that it's worth noting. Yes, this question how to weigh the different variables, and the Rishonim path I'd seem to weigh Lifi Mamon greater than Kirabatim. Ethan?
Well, what we say about the vision is, let's, even if the guy is closer, he's poor, or other than the door is poor.
Yeah, but you know, it really gets complicated, right? So if the Yashir is so well protected, if he's so in the inside, maybe the robber will never get there. Whereas a poor person on the outside who has a watch lying around, you know, whatever, it's easy for them to steal that, right?
Well, it takes a lot of information to calculate that.
Well,
it takes a lot of information.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, when when the rubber hits the road and you get into a granular analysis, it gets very difficult. And, you know, I'm not even sure there's enough information in the Sugya to provide us with that level of granular analysis. Yeah. Okay. So now I want to move us to a bit of a closer consideration or a closer examination of the Lifi Nefashos, Lifi Nefashos discussion. Let's just assume for a moment this is a single variable. We're just considering Lifi Nefashos. Romy's comment in the last year, I think, was very insightful and just helped clarify something that's ambiguous in the Sugya. When you say Lifi Nefashos, why do we go over Lifi Nefashos? So I think the standard view is, or one thing you might say, is because a person's life is at risk. As the Namuki Yosef said, if the Gaius is ba Lifi Nefashos, then a person's life is at risk, so we're go over Lifi Nefashos. Right? So there's a sense in which Lifi Nefashos naturally translates into being Dina Nefashos. Right? So again, we're collecting Lifi Nefashos because this is their Dina Nefashos hat on the line. I think Romy's right that the Chuvas Rashba, and that's what Muki Yosef says. If you look at his language here, he says, Im Yadua Shahaisa Bal Iske Nefashos Mechashvin Lifi Nefashos. And it's natural to think that Iske Nefashos here means like life and death scenario. Okay? Yes? I think Romy's right that when you read the Chuvas HaRashba, which we saw last year, Elef, so Chilek Aleph, Simon Elef Tzadi Aleph, he said in the case where you have to pay off the town or the ministers or whoever it is to be allowed to sell bread and everybody benefits equally, that you're Govel Lifi Nefashos, right? The Chazon Ish reading this Rashba said something that I think is obviously incorrect in light of Rumi's point. The Chazon Ish said, here. He's working off the Rush, who said that, remember, the Rush disagreed with the Rashba. The Rush in Aleph Chaf Beis said, Kol masha mechadshim ovde kochavim gzeru supranos la Yisrael afilu ma'anin osan b'yisurin ovim nias machol mishte govin akol afi mamon de'ikar kavanasam ala mamon. And so when you have these crusades or attacks on the Jewish community, you're govin afi mamon because their real das is to get the Jewish money, not to harm Jews. And the Chazon Ish says, commenting on this, Rush, blah blah blah, feel the manos and bisurim. Mevur midiv rabenu di yisurim chashiv kinefashos. So the thought was that within the Rush, were it to be the case that the crusaders were not looking to steal Jewish money, they were just looking to harass the ma'ana bi yisurim, then you would be govel kinefashos. And it's only because they're coming for the money in the Rush's estimation of the intent of the crusaders that you're Govel Lifi Mamon. Correct? So the Chazon Ish first one here, Mevur Midiv Ravenu Di Yisurim Chashiv Kinefashos. That beat people up, that's a type of Dinei Nefashos, right? Or afflicting, imposing that affliction is a type of Dinei Nefashos. I don't think that's a valid inference. Because the Rush's point is that if the intent of the crusaders was to harass Jews, you'd be govel lifi nefashos. Not necessarily because it's dine nefashos, because we view that as something of, like, the risk of human life being on the line, but because the proper distribution, a fair distribution of bearing the cost to protect that, is based off what each individual benefits. So it's not because their life is on the line that you're gova lefi nefashos, but it's because this is not about money. So each person stands in an equal relation to the benefit of not being harmed. Just like in the Rashba's tshuva, as Romy pointed out in the last year, the reason why you're gova lefi nefashos when there's a decree not to sell bread to Jews is not because that's, oh, our life is on the line if we can't eat bread necessarily, but rather because it affects each individual equally, regardless of net worth. Everybody see that? So I think there's a semantic ambiguity. It's the semantic confusion about the Fina Fashos and the Mukhi Yosef's interpretation of it as, oh, because if it's Baal, Dine Nefashos, then you're Gobo Fina Fashos. That's true. But it's not because it's Dine Nefashos that you're Gobo Fina Fashos. It's because it's per heading that you're Gobo Fina Fashos. And of course, if something is Dine Nefashos, then it's per head. But it doesn't have to be exclusively Dine Nefashos to justify collecting per head. So I think the Chazanish's, surprised actually, I think the Chazanish's inference is totally invalid. Right, the Chazanish's inference is Mabur Medir Rabbeinu Yisirim Chashivi Ki Nefashos. And I don't think that's right. It just means that Yisurim affects a person. And that's why we distribute it equally amongst persons. Zachariah, you look like you have a comment on this.
No, I'm just seeing this book.
So you can take another minute to read it. You guys agree with my...
The reason why it's an issue, you're saying the Chazanish is saying that Hashem is a bunch of things, the issue of needing a bunch is coming to attack.
Right, meaning the Rosh said, when they come to afflict us, Me'anen osam b'yisurim, u'v'niyas machal, they take away food from the Jewish community, that's Chashiv kinefashos. I think kinefashos here, he clearly means about, like, Dine Nefashos. No? Or maybe not. Maybe I'm misreading the Chazanish.
I read it similar to the explaining meaning that it's something at the individual level, not the mom, but not necessarily that's about.
Yeah. See, I don't think you have to say it's Chashivi Kinefashos here. I think you just have to say that the harm affects everyone equally. That's the salient point in the Rush. But maybe I'm not being charitable. Maybe that's what the Chazanish means, just a strange way of kinefashos, I think just connotes kedine nefashos. No? What do you think, Romy? You have a thought on this?
I mean, I already thought it was a strange thing to say. I mean, yeah, no,
I'm good. Okay.
Great. Yeah, I mean, I don't know, assuming that the history of Chazanish is what it means, like it's just we see Fina Fashos come up by non-Shmira, like the thousands of Fina Fashos.
Yeah, exactly.
A very like power of Fila kind of view, like, oh, you're all gonna die once you have right. Not like, I mean, when Fina Fashos comes up all over the place,
yeah,
it just means, you know, pick something number of people.
Correct.
I think that's in general.
So you're saying you agree with my reading of the Chazanish?
I'm not sure, but right. I definitely agree that the Fina Fashos principle could
should not be, right?
It's not necessarily tied
to Dine Nefashos, right? Yeah. Mortal peril in the Nemuvi Yosef is, of course, one reason for collecting Fina Nefashos.
Yeah.
Correct, but it doesn't exhaust the reasons of collecting Fina Nefashos. For me?
I think it's a little bit hard to make the point in the Chazanish because you can't distinguish between the two kinds of Nefashos here. Meaning, they all, I mean, or maybe that's true in general, I'm not sure if you thought of that, but here, it's Lefina Fashos that's all equal, and it's about meaning the Sakana Fashos is all equal, basically. So it's almost like both of those, you know, definitions or whatever, understandings of the word for Nefashos.
Well, I would say the Chazanish here seems to be saying that Yisurim are like Nefashos.
Right.
To me, he's trying to say a general principle in Halacha, you see that physical, it's like when the Gemara says that Malkus is Chatzi Misa. Means that if they're coming to attack Jews, that's Dine Nefashos.
Right.
Even if they're not trying to kill Jews.
Right. Right.
I think that's the inference Chaznish is drawing.
Yeah, well, I guess my point is like, in terms of this firm nefashos, you can't really, just, I don't know which one of those things you're saying. Because
okay.
They're both there.
Okay.
The general, right, there is, I mean, that, me that not being needed is right.
But my point is, you can't make this, the way I'm reading the Chaznish as being it's dinei nefashos, that's an invalid inference from the Rush. Because all the Rush is saying is that if their intent is to harm individuals,
yeah,
or go to the individuals.
When you say that, are you referring to, like, you can't take this as a general principle?
Right. You can't infer from this Rush that Yisurim are like nefashos. Because this is just a question about how each person benefits from the protection against pogroms or crusades. Yeah. Whereas the Chaznish seems to be trying to say, oh, here's a theory in halacha in general about the relationship between Yisurim and the nefashos. You know, it's like in Hilchos Pikuach Nefesh. You know, we say that, oh, getting a wound that could cause an infection is considered the nefashos, maybe. The Chaznish is making that type of analysis here about the you know, Yisurim. Okay. Great. Let's move to a further point, a separate, isolated point that I want to make. Shulchan Aruch, the Rama especially, quotes two deos about this thing, about the Yisurim, about the Crusades. And I just wanted to draw your attention to this comment of the Pischei Tshuva. Did I get a chance to see this comment of the Pischei Tshuva, citing the note of Yehuda in his Tshuvos? Very nice discussion here. Who wants to know about the tax, I guess, that the Prague in the 18th century, were they, is that before the Austro-Hungarian Empire? Kobe, aren't you a history major? And how's your European history, your early modern European history?
Well, I
heard
a lot of
people
died this time.
Yeah. I think they're part of the, you know, probably the Habsburgs or one of those Eastern European monarchies that ruled over what's today Czechoslovakia. So the king, Gazar HaMelech, that the Jews of the town have to pay a mas klali, a general tax, and the Chazni, and the Note of Yehuda says you pay half lefi mamon, half lefi nefashos, correct? Why is it chatzi lefi mamon, chatzi lefi nefashos? So it's a multivariable type view. And why is that?
Yeah, it's like very reasonable. It's like, oh, like, you know, it's a very fair tax to Jews. Like, we're living in this in their country, therefore, like, half of it is like based on, you know, like, almost like rent.
Oh, so number one, that's a great, it's a really interesting view about the theory of taxation. Here he's trying to figure out, like, what does it mean? Like, what are you paying taxes for? So, at least in Prague in the 18th century, the Note of Yehuda thought that this type of tax that the Jewish community has to pay is equivalent to paying rent. Or at least part of the tax is equivalent to paying rent. And read this great line, ki amas. Yeah, so there's two points here. The first point is very interesting. He characterizes the mas as equivalent to rent, just like I pay rent for an apartment. I pay rent to live in a medina. Like you pay rent on the land. Very fascinating theory. Anybody's interested in the theory of taxation? So that's how the Note of Yehuda conceptualized at least part of the tax. I don't understand why he therefore infers therefore that it's right, therefore, to pay lefi nefashos. Like you don't pay rent per resident. No, you pay rent per space. I guess he's thinking that you're paying for your rights to live in the land.
Yeah, I think he's like saying, since it's like a collective Jew tax, like every single Jew has to find his way into the country.
We're all paying to be here.
Like, of course the default is no Jew should be allowed here, and every Jew has to pay some sort of, you know, entry rent. Like very accepting of
it. That background assumption. So we all, the point is that we're paying to be here.
Yeah.
So I guess we all benefit, I guess something like that, right? Just to be here, we're all equal in that tzchus, and so we all chip in equally. So this is clearly not a dinei nefashos, right? It's not dinei nefashos in the sense of our life's at risk. He's just saying this is a head tax per person because we're all just paying for the equal right to live in this society. Everybody agree with that? Why is Chatzi Lefi Mamron? So what's that argument?
So since they are giving us, I'm not sure exactly what sense, but they're giving us some sort of sustenance or to do business.
I think he means that they're giving us the access to the market. They give us michya, they give us a livelihood. Lasa the masa mata. So they're giving us the, you know, this is actually very, this is an old, not necessarily old in Rabbi Yehuda, but this is a very well-established argument. You need a government agency like the SEC to regulate markets and break up monopolies. And so just that's a benefit that everybody gets, and access to the market is a reason to, you know, support the government. So here too, he's saying there's one issue that we're able to live here. That's the Fina Fashos. There's a separate issue that we're able to engage in the economy and commerce, and that's something we pay for separately. And there, it should be calculated lefi mamon, because that's about economic gains, economic benefit. And economic benefit should be evaluated kefi mamon. It's a very reasonable analysis of the Nota Bihuda. Everybody agree with that? Yeah?
I mean, it's a little like arbitrary at the end of the day,
it's
like, oh, and therefore
correct. Yeah. Why should it be weighted 50-50?
Yeah, like most of the postum always take this, like, oh, there's two factors, obviously each one's half.
Right.
The man of Yukon, like, we'll see later, it's like, no, we got to figure it out. Like, how much is further than the partial bar, how much is further this bar?
Yeah, the weighing of each variable should be more sophisticated than just cut it 50-50. Yeah, but you're right, he's assuming 50-50. Unless chatzi means like chatzi shir, where they just mean divided between, not a perfect 50-50 split. Something like chatzi shir osam haTorah doesn't mean half the shir. It means the portion. So maybe they just mean it should be apportioned between mamon and. No? It's too radical?
I feel like the shir would protest that even.
Who would?
Ashir would protest that reading.
right. Assuming that it would be more apportioned towards the mamon. Yeah. Okay. Good. Wanted to get that point in also. Okay. So now I want to move. That's all for this part. Yeah, Romy, you have a comment?
Yeah, do you think that this five in the question is more of a head tag opposed to the five necessarily? Is that change the like basis for distribution or justification for taxation in a significant way, like off the Hanav point?
That it's not the Dine Nefashos?
Yeah.
Well, so you're asking about the relationship between the justification and the distribution?
Or, no, I mean, that also, but even just even different kind of distribution. So, well, no, we know what basis we're distributing. Or like, is the distribution based on the head tax as opposed to the kashas different? Meaning, you say that you're distributing the cost and the kashas, maybe you're paying it based on that. Is that also true if you say the head tax?
Like, to pay rent to enter society? Arguably, it could still be based on hana. I mean, I think it'd still be hana, just a different type of hana. Right, the Hana.
I'm going to say, I don't have the other.
Nothing that immediately jumps to mind. So I think those could be two separate Hana type considerations. Sorry?
Yeah, I mean, there's like a common justification in the Postos and the Rishona for Tatum of Husadina that, since the Melech owns all this land or is living on it, therefore, he can like set tonight and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Which probably in some sense is what kind of Nota Bihuda, at least that perspective, what he's appealing to here. It's like, oh, but yeah, we don't really own any land here and sort of like that. I wonder if that's sort of like a weaker basis, a weaker justification than kind of stuff we were discussing earlier. But no, it's like the Melech of a certain society has a right to collect taxes, not because it's like a so clear masculine relationship, individuals nine kind of thing.
Yeah.
I'm saying, like, why does it feel like
So you're raising a very interesting question. You're asking whether the argument of the Noda Behuda, the taxes are like Schardira, is that trying to already justify the legitimacy of the taxes, which is more of a Kovet Shirim type project, where like on what basis is this power, as opposed to saying, oh, it's of course the melech or the ruler has the right to impose these things. That's an interesting point. It would depend on how you read kimo ma'os dira. You know, does he mean that's what legitimizes it? Or he's just saying that's the best way to conceptualize it? Like, what is it that we're paying for? So I don't know if it has to take a stand on that question. But I could see how it might. Yeah. Okay. Let's move now to the relationship very quickly between Mammon and Nefashos.
So let's go in just to the issue of Lefi Mammon versus Lefi Nefashos. So I want to make one comment on this question. So what was the reading of the Nemuvi Yosef? Well, we'll determine the Gemara Safek and Bava Basra Daf Zayin about whether we go over Lefi Mammon or Lefi Nefashos. What was Mukio 6's reason, Benji?
The reason why people are coming back.
Exactly. What is the motivation for the attackers? If the attackers are motivated or interested in Mammon, you pay Lefi Mammon. If they're motivated by Nefashos, you pay Lefi Nefashos. That's the Mukio 6's analysis. Okay. The Yad Ramah offers a different theory. What's the Yad Ramah's theory? I think Zakaria put this on the WhatsApp chat. We have some exchange. So let's read this inside a little carefully. Any volunteer to read the Yad Ramah carefully inside? Ariel, did you prepare it?
Not well enough.
but you still want to read it. Take it away, Ariel.
The house which has more money in it than that is going to be susceptible to more damage than that which is not.
Good. So that is seems to be like a Hanoah-based theory. A house that has more money, it is more subject to harm. So you should go over Lefi Mammon. That's not controversial.
All of these shabbat may other men build them. The call Mammon finish adapted in Afshay by. Or you go based on the amount of shevach per person.
No. Or Lefi Shevach B'nei Adam. I think that just means the number of people.
The whole Mammon finish adapted the Nafshay by.
The chol mamon inish, all of a person's money.
Honest knowledge of his soul.
Adaita denafshe ba'ilei. No. Adaita. Yeah, or with the intent of
killing.
Whoa. I got violent very quickly. Adaita dinafshe baile. So what does baile mean? He wants it. He needs it. So let's parse that sentence. All of a person's money, where a person only wants his money, baile. Adaita dinafshe. Yeah. A person wants his money for what?
Himself.
Yeah, for his person, right? Why do you have money?
What does right? that mean?
Philosophically or semantically,
yeah,
or
a person wants the money for his person, that he wants the money for himself.
Yeah, is that foreign to you?
No,
what's that?
No, not really. That like the reason why he's taking money is he wants money for himself.
Well, this is not talking about the perpetrator.
The reason why a person has money for himself.
Oh. What does that mean? You're puzzled by that phrase?
Yeah.
You don't know what he's saying.
And therefore, the amount of people.
Yeah, meaning what? Meaning what? It's a very nice view. I like this very healthy perspective. So let me frame it a little more, then we'll try to interpret what he's saying. Then what Yosef's reading is that whether your gobel of imamun or finafashos depends on the intent of the perpetrators, of the attackers. If they want money, you evaluate the tax of the money. If they want nefashos, you evaluate the tax of the nefashos. The Arma, I believe, says they're for sure coming for money. The perpetrators are coming to steal your cash. Okay? The question is, even granted that they're coming to steal your cash, should we evaluate lafi cash? Because that's what's on the line. That's what you're benefiting by the protection, the salvation of your money. Or do we evaluate lafi nefashos? Why in the world would we evaluate lafi nefashos? They're coming for your money. So what's his answer?
That a person has money for himself.
Yeah. A person's money is really there to help him. Right? To serve the interests of his person. So what's the right way of thinking about the benefit that a person receives through his money? Based on evaluating the amount of money? Or just seeing that, no, it's that he himself continues to exist and benefit from his property. So it's really a hana that goes to his person. So when we calculate the hana, it gets divided per person, not through the value of their bank account. Meaning, what the Yad Arma is arguing is that it's senseless to do a separate evaluation of a person's net worth, because the net worth is only instrumentally valuable to facilitate the nefesh, or a person's own actions, projects, etc. So when we do an evaluation, we do it based off the true significance of the thing at risk, which is broken down with the nefeshos, not with the, like, the money sitting in the bank. Everybody see that? That's how I read this phrase. So he's accepting the proposition that it's true, tvei nafesh niske, tvei machabre, they're coming for your mammon, so a person with a lot of cash is going to benefit more than somebody with a little bit cash. But that's like a morally meaningless way of evaluating it, because on the second, on the lefi shevach b'nei adam, the argument is, kol mammonim eshadayta denafshei ba'ilei. Like, the money just serves your personal projects, or your, the actions of you as a person, so we break it down per person. Does everybody understand my reading of the Yad Arma? Yeah? Let me say a little more just to motivate this. Let's think. I think it's uncontroversial to say that, more or less, people are of equal moral standing. They're each person has equal moral worth. Yeah, like me aimer the dama didach sumak fei type argument. Yeah, the machtes hashekel is everyone pays equally. Asher lo yarba adalo yamid. At the right conjugation, adalo yamid. And Romy, we haven't found that Ramban yet, right?
No, I started with
this stuff. Okay, I also have to look a little more carefully. But you could see it also, it's implicit in that Rabbeinu Yerucham, that when you're talking about kapara, right, everyone's evaluated the same way, because the neshama is weighted equally. Yes? Now, the question is, now we all know that people have different net worths, right? People are worth more than the other. So sometimes you might think that it's silly to allow a person's monetary possessions to frame the way we perceive the equality or the significance of each person. Yes? Or no? Sounds, yeah. Like, you shouldn't give so much moral significance to a person's economic holdings. Like in the United States, you'll say the rich shouldn't have a greater say in elections than the poor. Everyone should have equal representation. And that's why you shouldn't let money influence politics, et cetera, et cetera.
Now, you might, what the Yadar Ma, one way of thinking about the Yadar Ma's point is that when we do this evaluation, we look at the more meaningful moral category. Well, it's like, right, so we're like, he's basically saying money is not a significant, is not the significant, the leidas hasafe is on the thing that's more significant. Right? So like to now say, oh, the money is the thing that you're saving. That's like a strange thing to emphasize. The money is only instrumentally meaningful in advancing the Nashe Danish, right? His own personal activities, etc. So when we, when we're Goga, we think of it in terms of persons, not in terms of network. Does that make sense?
Good. And then Mugayosev is much more back on the ground and logical.
Then Mugayosev is more logical?
Yeah.
Why?
Because if you have a dilapidated house and a house with the fancies, the person with the fancy house is in higher regard, but the dilapidated house is no fear.
Let me think about that a little more. I think you're just thinking about it in terms of like benefit. You're assuming the benefit is about the property.
Yeah.
And Yadar Ma is saying that's a weird way to, that's a strange thing to focus on. We should focus on.
Well, he admits at the beginning that more than staying out, which is a good thing to have.
Right.
But then he's saying he doesn't care that statistically it might be that somebody with fancy houses can be dead.
Right, because he's saying that's like the, because the different monetary holdings is just instrumental to facilitate how a person could live. So why should we be goga with the mammon rather than the thing that mammon is significant for? Right? Josh, and then Eitan, and then Zacharia.
Isn't that just like a really strange argument to make? Like, yeah, obviously, every benefit you ever have, obviously at the end of the day is for you, but if we're talking about benefit, then like this isn't politics. Like, right? Yeah, obviously the morally is equal to that, but I don't understand why you would go that route to determine. Yeah, my $100 and your $1,000, they're both for us individually, but one of them does more for us than the other. I don't see the equation between that and the person. I don't know.
Yeah. Let me think about that. So you're an Amugiyosev guy, not a Yadar Ma guy.
I guess. I mean, it just seems like a strange argument.
But you agree with my reading. You agree that's what he's saying.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, it's a part of my theory.
Chol mamon inish adaita denapshi boyle.
Yeah, I don't know what that means. So.
You don't know what that means?
No, so I mean, well, I'm agreeing.
All right, let's take Eitan. Sorry, then
wrong. Even though $1,000 might be more than 100, the poor person $100 might be more, like, again, $100 is more than
Yeah, and do you think that's what the Yadar Ma is saying, or you're just saying that as a separate, as a separate counter?
I don't really understand the line either.
Okay, that's a fair pushback on.
Well,
all right, I mean, Josh had made a similar point earlier in the year, right, and some other discussion.
Yeah.
Right, it came up in that. Right. All right, you don't have to respond now. You could just.
No, I don't think that. I mean, I think people just as a party of women, they're targeting others, so not going to be act about things like that.
Okay. Skaria? Do you agree with my reading of the Yadar Ma?
I think I agree what it's saying. It's definitely semantically very difficult line, just to part, but I think like that's probably what it's saying.
Right.
I wonder how much.
What else could it mean, right? What else could that Rami as an alternative?
Well, I don't exactly understand why it makes sense to say you're saying like. It, maybe I have a Josh point, but it's irrelevant. Like they're not coming for the bus, so what the mom was implying. Or what I thought you were saying, or I thought you wrote in the WhatsApp the other day, maybe this is different, is that a person's money is part of their personhood, and therefore an attack on the money is an attack on their personhood.
So metaphysical.
And therefore, I don't buy the argument. That's what I thought it was saying.
I think adaita denafshe boile sounds. What does a person want their money for? Right. So it's not about some metaphysical thing about the relation, like this objective metaphysical relationship between people and their property. It's just saying that people need money instrumentally for their needs. And so
then,
it's.
I mean, if you want it in theory, I don't understand logically how that really holds up. Like, okay, so a person
is only money is only relevant if you're, you know, if a person exists. But nobody's threatening the person. So why would we calculate the money based on the person?
Well, for the reason that I was trying to motivate, that it's strange to focus. So what if we backtracked my assumption a little bit and said that we don't know why the Gaius is coming? So in my first presentation, I said, oh, the Yadarma buys the Mubiyose assumption that they're coming with the Mammon. The question is, do we view Mammon as meaningful in itself or Mammon as instrumental towards serving people? If it's instrumental, then we're building with the people, not with the Mammon itself. Yes? What if we relax? What if we change the background assumption and say the Yadarma does not buy the Imuga Yosef's clean cut between Bayam with the Mammon or Bayam with the Nefesh? It's always a suffix. We don't know why robbers come. And then the question is, by default, should we think about it in terms of, like, so, like, I think we all agree, like, in the Holocaust, right, if there's a risk of nefashos, like, those types of events don't distinguish between the rich and the poor, right? Everyone's life is on the line. And so the thought is, like, yes, there are two risks. There's a risk to your mammon, and there's a risk to your nefashos, but It's like the type argument, like the whole discussion of mammon gets subsumed under nefashos, because that's what, like, what good is your money if you don't have a nefesh to use it? And then you could say, oh, because, like, b'chol mammon in shadayta d'nafshi ba'ilei, like, there's no value to money if you don't have your personhood, so then we just do it with the personhood. That's a better read. You guys are happier reading it that way? Well,
I like that.
You like that reading more. So we should say that the Yadarma is talking about a case of the Gaius maybe coming for both, or we don't know. And then it's just a question, should we evaluate a Lufi Mammon? So, like, we know the Nazis are coming to Poland, and now we need to, like, raise money to defend the communities. So are we going to do a Lufi Mammon and say, hey, look, you're going to save your... Or say, no, this is like DNA Nefasha, as everyone is facing the same risk. And the argument of the Yadarma, it's not... doesn't undermine, like, the interesting point of the analysis. The argument of the Yadarma is, well, money is only instrumental to help your soul or your person, so we'll go looking at fashas. Scar, you like that better?
I'm actually kind of both. I think it's like an interesting question. It's like when a fact is coming, let's say, under this background something, saying, what's the potential hazard? The potential hazard is moral peril and losing money.
Right.
I said, hey, when we were coming, what we expect to be paying is the hesitation that people are facing is mortal harm. I think even under the previous assumption, where there actually does come from the mammon, I think it's an interesting question. Like, the hesitation is, since this is, like, it's not like a local mesic incident, like, oh, someone's shore, the line shore, like, it's their entire property, it's their entire life. Like, is it so obvious that the hesitation of a rich guy losing all of his money is more than the hesitation of a poor guy losing all of his money? It's actually, like, once you kind of go into kind of total binary perspective, I think it's actually, there's a legitimacy to think, like, listen, this wall is protecting, allowing you to have property. That's what it's allowing you to have. Not,
yeah,
have each item or...
So that's like the argument I was trying to make earlier.
Yeah, I think that's one thing to expect. Right. Is like, what is the object of the nesek? Is
right.
The object of the nesek each item? Is the object of the nesek your right to property? Is the object of the nesek your life? I think, like,
right. But when you think about it in extreme cases, it's easier. So the idea is, like, Bill Gates is billionth dollar, gives him no extra hana. Right. So it's like, are we gonna charge him more because he's, like, saving more money? It's like, he can only use a tiny fraction of that in his lifetime anyway. So it's not like that adds more value to him. That's an extreme case where the analysis, I think, is trivial, right? So a guy with, let's say, $100 million and a guy with $100 billion, or could we get the same hana? There's only so many times you could fly to space, right? And you're making a similar point. Like, end of the day, like, a person's money is there to help their lives. So a little more, a little less, like, they both suffer the same devastating loss.
Yeah, I'm trying to argue why we don't take this perspective in other, like, Zeke. saying they're much more local, particular, you know, asset being damaged. Here it's like, this is about you, where you're living, all your property. It's much more about like a total property at all.
It's interesting. I hear that suggestion. Ariel?
Yeah, how does the outer realm do, like, if we're going to say that that would the not fish, by the way, in the city of Romontaris?
What?
Because in the city of Romontaris, they say a person's going to kill them.
Yeah.
So you're saying that the person really has themselves.
Yeah. You're talking about the irrational person?
Yeah.
You're saying, how do you make sense of into the Mamadatsma Momona? Right? Right? There's someone who's Momona, was Chavaval of Megufo. There are people like that, right? People end up dying over their money. Unfortunate for them, the Yadama would say. Right? I think that Gemara is an interesting Gemara. That Gemara might be a psychological fact about people, not rational or prudential advice. But I wouldn't give you that advice. You know, the robber comes into your house with a gun, probably should let him take it. Well, no, I would say, in my scenario, I would say, take what you want, you know, just like get out. There's always other types of concerns that the Jewish people have faced over their history. Right. But a petty thief comes. You know, I don't think it's smart to get into like a gunfight over, right? Just like take what you need and get out. That's what I would say. Maybe I shouldn't say that on the recording because I want to for the Ghana who's listening to YU Torah, like back. I ruined my deterrent.
So. You mean it's a sheer nine,
right? All right, we get to that. This guy, I think it's worth thinking about more. That's why I think that Yadarma is a very nice little piece. All right, so let's now. I want to move to discussing the Mordechai and the Yadarma's Kuntros.
So we come back here to the question of Kana versus cost, right? Cost versus benefit as a basis for the tax.
Yes, this sounds familiar. What we saw in last year. The way we understood most Rishonim is they're thinking in terms of benefit. The guy closer to the wall benefits from the wall. The guy with more money benefits more from the protection. So they're all those Rishonim are thinking in terms of benefit.
I think that's the Rashi's way. That's the Yosef's way. That's probably the Yosef's way. The Ritva's way when he distinguishes between Metalman and Karkos. So there's a lot of fees out there that you're paying based off the benefit.
Which is very reasonable, right? So the thought is you're obligated to chip in for a tax because you're benefiting. Or you're obligated to chip in a certain purport. But the way we distribute the tax is based off how much you're benefiting relative to somebody else. Whether you want to focus on the justification or the justification for the tax in the first place, or why a tax should be distributed a certain way, or thinking of that in terms of benefit. The Mukhi Yosef, which we saw in the end of last year, thinks about it differently. He thinks of it in terms of what? What's his main point? The Yadarma. The Yadarma thinks about it differently. What's his main point? Here's the key line. He's talking about Lufi Kiribatim in this discussion. What's the basis for distributing the tax with the kiribatim, with the proximity to the wall, Romy? Yeah, how much you raise, how much you contribute to the cost of the wall, right?
And here we have Yadarma's very nice geometrical discussion about, make sure I get this right again, the circumference is proportional to the radius. So assuming that the wall is built around the circumference, so the larger R gets, the larger radius, the larger the circumference. So the thought is that a house, a radius that's large is going to impose much more of a cost on the wall and a house that's built where the radius is small. Everybody get that analysis? I think that's clearly what the Anamas is saying.
And he says, Romy, why don't you just read this section? Elam is Stavra, the Chigavino Lakirabatim. Father, you can see the shtickel l'shitaso in that he's a single variable guy when it comes to kirabatim. So he's saying it's only kirabatim. Were this about hana? Lefi Mamon should also be relevant, which is how the other Rishonim actually read the Gemara, right? That it's Kirabatim and Lefi Mamon. His own view is that it's just Kirabatim. And he's like, well, if this is about Anah, why isn't Lefi Mamon relevant? So it can't be about Anah. And his answer is it's about costs, right? So go on. So he says, Ela Hainu Taima.
Ela Hainu Taima shouldn't
be a so one second. That's
in you're causing the wall to move farther out.
Right. And well, I think he means that Lafi Kirav Habatim, Lachoma, this is just an analytic point, that the closer you are to the wall, the further you are from the center of town. And I think that's true geometrically. But Hadavar Yadua, now he's gonna make the mathematical point. The radius, kav min atabor is the radius, yarbe hakav asoviv. Exactly. Vinimtza. So yeah, person who lives at a greater radius is more so than somebody who lives near the origin point. Great. That's really the core of his analysis, right? Now, I think his argument for rejecting the other views is pretty bad. If you go back earlier in the piece, which we can look at very quickly. But before I say something about that, I just want to mention that the Yarama just assumes that you're building this wall organically. Right? Or you say he's explicit about this assumption. Meaning the town is built a certain way, and then you're building the wall around the town. But he acknowledges, he concedes in his analysis some interesting cases. He says, let's say there's a wall that's already there. Right, when you buy your house. So it's not your house that's contributing to the wall, because the wall is already set, like the wall is already fixed about where it's going to be. So in that case, everybody pays equally, things like that. Or he says, let's say there's a bore mine, or there's some strategic benefit to having the wall enclose a hill where you can protect the city from. So then the circumference of the wall is not caused by your bias, it's caused by the joint strategic interest of the city. In that case, you pay equally. So he recognized a lot of assumptions, a lot of exceptional cases when the wall is not built to accommodate the homes.
Really, like you go where you cost.
Correct. Right.
You decide to live on the outskirts of town, set the border.
Exactly.
And then he has some detailed analysis, which I don't want to get into, about. About exactly how to ratio the guys on the outside relative to the inside, right? So it's like, this is like a question of descriptions. Do you say, well, let's imagine a radius equals 2. How much would a wall at R equal 2 have cost? How much is a wall at R equals 10? And then do that difference. He says, no, he thinks that's not the right way to calculate it. There's some other way of calculating it. No, you just do, there's only one wall being built. He said at one point. And then we just have to figure out how to distribute across everybody proportionate to the radius. But you don't do this comparative of like, were the wall built at R equal 2, how much would that have cost? And then it's like Zen and the Zello plus there relative to this wall.
don't know if anybody got into that granular detail.
There's also just kind of another thing, like, are you, is the reason you're paying more because you're causing more costs to other individuals, or is no, there's a communal contract.
Correct.
And like, your relationship to the community is your big cost.
Exactly.
So, nice.
Those are like the description issues about like, what is it that money is being raised for? Exactly. But we don't have to get into that because that's a little of this. That's like a good, raises good mathematical questions. The other point that he makes that's very interesting is he says, of course, the size of your house matters. Lefi mida, did everybody see that?
Because obviously, a bigger house is going to cause more hekevisera than a small house. And he says, everybody agrees to that. And you think that's uncontroversial? Even though it's not in the Gemara. Because his theory of Gorei and Hotzelos Viseros applies for sure to Lefi Mida. So he adds that into his analysis.
You know, what motivates his going, so for us, what's conceptually important is the Yad Ramah going the route of costs rather than Hana. And that's really what's, and as I mentioned last year, you know, whenever you're talking about taxation or unjust enrichment to make things fair, you know, either of these seems like a good candidate. Right? Is it fair based off benefits? Is it fair based off costs? So intuitively, it's hard to know which one is better. Like in the Yorid Sugya, we saw, you know, Shamin Yadal Tachtona between the costs and the Shava. So this is a recurring
type of method.
I just want to briefly mention, again, this is really the details of the Yad Ramah's analysis. His argument against the Lefi Mamon people, or against the Hana people, so against the Beis Yosef and Rashi, who say that the closer to the wall you are, you pay more because you benefit more. I think those arguments are pretty weak. You know, he has all these empirical assumptions about, over here. How are you going to draw a difference between somebody who's one amma closer than somebody who's one amma farther? Is there really a difference between those two people in terms of the hana they're getting? But all those arguments take the form of, oh, it's very difficult to know where to draw the line, so no line could be drawn anywhere. So there's no difference altogether. It's a very weak form of an argument, right? It's like saying, let's say here there's a city, right? And here there's a desert. 1S.
One S.
Yeah, and here there's a desert. We don't know exactly where the desert starts, so there's no difference in the city and the desert. No. Maybe over here there's some ambiguity about the border, but at some point, like, they're different things. And so they got a month, and well, Lafiki or Baka, and you're like, how could one Amma make a difference in terms of Ana? Okay, so at some point, you just have to draw a line, right? Like in America, you have tax brackets. And those lines are a little arbitrary. Yeah, like why is it that somebody making over $100,000, whatever, I don't know exactly what the brackets are. Why are the lines drawn there? Yeah, you draw the line in an arbitrary way. But that doesn't mean that, like, there's no reason to distinguish altogether between different tax brackets. But the Adonai's argument takes that form. So just
interesting thing to think about when you go through this more precisely. So you have a few hands on this? Shmuel?
So, given that we have problems with the Yad Ramah, in general, there's such a big distinction between charging taxes based on cost, meaning versus society, versus the whole knowing.
So just that, I don't have a problem with the Yad Ramah in terms of its halakhic conclusion and position.
Right.
It's the method for him.
Right.
Rejecting the Hana.
So, I'm not asking on the conclusion. If there's such a difference between the cost one gives to society versus the Hana one gets to society, the Hana one gets from society is, by definition, the cost one for society.
No, I think they're for sure separable. For sure separable. So the idea is, you could say, a family that's on welfare, we know what their costs are, the cost they impose on society.
The cost is the cost of their welfare.
Right. But the Hana they get from society is much more, right? There's the, arguably, there's protection, military, and.
So their costs are the cost it takes to protect that family plus the welfare they get.
the costs.
It takes to protect their family, just like it would take the.
The costs are very difficult to calculate for the military thing, right? Because it's like a ner lech and ner lemea thing. You know,
the cost by the number of the population. Again, you get into the nitty gritty details of the RMR.
I don't see any prima facie reason to think that the costs would align with the benefit.
I don't see any prima facie reason to see why they would.
Why they wouldn't align?
Yeah.
Anybody want to give an easy example? Yeah, Josh.
I mean, cost and benefit are normally the same. When I pay $12 to YU to get a fake Google, so I'll get $12 for Apple. I got like maybe two.
All right. Like when I take Amtrak, I pay $19 each way, but I get like millions of dollars of benefit. Right, my trains.
I mean, I would argue that the benefit of a bagel when you're completely starving is a whole lot more than the amount it actually costs.
There you go. Great point, though. So when did you pop in here?
I've been paying attention. I just can't put video on at the moment, so it looks like it's out of nowhere.
Nice. That was good. Has a Gria issue, I guess. Good. I didn't see you on the Zoom before. I was there. So that's a cold, cold dough. Yes, well, I don't think I'm seeing a reason to think that they would align, and if they align, it's by coincidence.
From the accounting perspective, the city's getting X amount of money in, X amount of money going out in a given period of time.
Any accounting people here to give?
Assets equals liability plus owner's equity. There's no owner's equity, so assets equals liability.
Yeah, but I think you're just thinking of Hana in terms of like a book, like the financial, like what are they getting in revenue?
Yeah.
No, that's the dope.
Right.
If you're starving, you're going to die, and you only pay $12 for food.
So then how do you put a value on anything? Like,
good. So something there.
Yeah, so you could, there are ways to try to, whether it's...
So the poor person is going to have to get more than the rich person because... The fact that
they
get more
in the city.
Maybe.
Okay.
That's a okay.
If you're going Lafiana, maybe. That's
you
want
to
feel stiff
a lot.
Yeah. I need to think about that more. Romy, you have a comment?
Yeah.
Sorry, everyone, go ahead.
I don't know. I brought up the Chloe, we did the interview here, came up with others also. Is it really true that, like, the inside, if the inside guy wasn't there, the outside guy wouldn't be causing a bigger deal?
Ah.
You know,
he only builds his house on the outskirts because the inside guy.
Way, so I can't build. So you're calling me to build around here. So it's been, or a different way of saying it is like, you know, we didn't have to decide to build. We could build this, you know, the wall over here and left all you out of the house.
Right. Yeah, I think it's a good argument against the Adharma. This is always a difficult question when you get into this analysis, which is what's the relevant counterfactual? Right? Is the counterfactual that
the city would have a wall at R equal two, or is the counterfactual that my house would be here and your house would be here? Like we switch houses. That's your point, right? I think it's interesting. That's another way of, I think the Adharma might try to address something at some point. But I agree with you. Like you could run these counterfactuals in other ways that would undermine the analysis.
Angie?
Those are great domestic disputes. What do we say about getting that? Like, who benefits more from the subway? Someone who takes the subway every day for work, or someone who only needs to take the subway like once a week to get like where they need to go? Because, like, in the absence of the subway, the person. Both people would have to buy a car, and then per trip, you know, the person who drives to work every day, it would be instead of $2.75, it would be like $4. But like this guy, he only drives once a week, and you know that's like $20. So that my title is the person that has to drive that uses the public services less often, but would have to then replace it. With something else, they benefit more from the public services.
It's interesting. I think I want to hear more about your example, but that gets into the nitty gritty of calculating the benefit, right?
I guess so. But, I mean, I don't know
right. And it's hard to be really precise about it. I mean, I think even in the Rishonim here, like you can see, oh yeah, 50% Lefi Anaf. Like it's just, they're using it as some benchmark, but they're not really doing a precise application of it, right? And I think there's no real good way to do that. It's probably impossible to do that. You know, it's like when America bombed, sent those Tomahawk missiles to bomb Syria a few years ago after Syria used chemical weapons. So it's like, which Americans benefit more from that, right? It's like the Jews were like, yeah, bomb Syria. Or like the people who are pacifists. So you can't really do a good analysis in each case about the public services, about how much you benefit. So you're going to have a lot of low plugs. Which is why the Yad Ramah's argument against the Hana people is so bad. Because of course they're going to be low plug, like in this.
Well, also, who incurred that cost? Like, which citizens made us bomb Syria? Like, it's not like the Yad Ramah is so much that, like, charging based on, like, you know, who.
Yeah, I agree, right? I don't think cost. He makes it seem as if the cost thing, at least within the Palestinian circumference, is perfectly mathematical and rigorous. But of course, Romy's pointing out, you know, even just, well, why is it counterfactual, like, relative to R equals B? My house would have been R equals 2. Right? So I think in all these things, I don't think you go to all the other for the other part that the cost is a better way of going. Or even that is, like, geometrical analysis is more rigorous. Yeah. Okay. So we're all in agreement the Yad Ramah is a cost person? Yes? Okay. So let's look at the Mordechai in our last 15 minutes. And let's see his analysis. So first of all, there are two tshuvas, the Maharam, that make their way into the Mordechai. As you know, the Mordechai is just a repository of tshuvas of Chachmei Ashkenaz, especially the Maharam Rutenberg. The Mordechai is a Talmud of the Maharam Rutenberg. So he has two tshuvas. Let's start with tshuva number one. That's, let's start with tshuva number two, then we'll go to tshuva number one, because tshuva number two is more important for our purposes. In addition to the beginning of the tshuva, where he says, by default, follow the minog for how to raise taxes, right? We saw this implicitly in the Gemara Kuf Tezayin. The Yad Ramah says, the Mordechai citing the Maharam says, if you have to raise taxes, hakol lefi minhag ha'ir, follow its custom. He cites the Gemara Bava Kama Kuf Tezayin about the Gaius, almas linen basar minog. Then you figure out based off what the Gemara says. Right? So he's a big minhag guy in this tshuva. And then he says, very interestingly, what do you do when you're gova, lefi, mamon, when you have houses that stand out? Yes? Tall houses, maybe beautiful houses. Here he says taller houses. So who had a chance to prepare this section of the Mordechai? Romy?
Yeah.
Okay, stop for a second. So what's he saying?
So if you hire houses that like are more visible, so you can zoom in for like any of
it. Yes.
So then you're causing more damage because they'll see you in
front of
the city because
you're Gori Mayan, right? Exactly. There's this phrase in Yiddish. Did I mention this? I have to look up what the phrase is. My mother-in-law always uses it. It's like you don't have to like poke the goyim in the eye. It's like when you do something that just like draws a lot of like attention, right? It's like when I leave my bike in my sunroom. I was like, oh, someone's gonna steal it because like you're just like poking them in the eye, like you know, leaving this nice bike accessible. Like everyone sees that you have, they're gonna want to steal it from you. So the Maharam seems to be saying something like that for the batim gevoim in the city. So you can think these marauders come, they're passing by there, and they see these gorgeous houses, these very tall houses. That's going to draw their attention. They're going to want to sack the city. They're going to want to come and see what goods you're hiding there. Yes? Yeah. So when we collect the tax to protect the city for the Choma, we're going to collect more from the owners of the Batim Gevoim because they're Osim Ayin. Right? They're poking the apparent enemy or the purported enemy in the eye by drawing their attention to the goods or the wealth that the city has. Yes? We all agree with that? So here it's an interesting question
whether this is a cost. I think Rumi was assuming last year this is a cost. Or we think about this a little differently. How else might we think of this not so much as a cost, but
we have a causing home damage.
Yeah, gorei maneza, which is the phrase that the Maharam himself actually uses, gorei maneza.
What's his raya for this theory? Bavakama kufta zayin. What's over there, Romy? Remind us.
The boat case. Boat case is, remind us.
You're in a storm and he doesn't look like he's got some weight, so they drop the weight and the person almost up.
Exactly. The Gemara says you have a sfina shaisa malaches bayam. There's a storm, you gotta offload some of the cargo. You offload the cargo based on weight. Right? So you don't triage based off value. You don't say the guy with the most value, with the most possessions, he starts losing his possessions first. You triage based off the thing that's more weighty. Right? So Rashi here says in the Gemara, 100 liters, let's say 100 ounces of gold is the same as 100 ounces of silver when you're trying to triage. You really just go for... what are bars though? You go by weight. What's the underlying theory? Maram says, what's the theory for doing that? Alma. Yeah, it's all about the cause of the harm, the thing that's inducing the harm. So I guess it's possible to conceptualize that as a cost. But if so, it's a different type of cost than the cost of the choma. This is almost something like a type of rode theory. And it's this thing is the source of the harm, or it induces the harm, it causes the harm. So that we charge the person who's causing the harm a greater share in the burden of neutralizing. Yeah. Did you guys think this is cost or better thought of as something different? Yeah, Benji.
Yeah, it seems like this is like a different sugya. This is about Nezek as opposed to like Sarfe, beer. If this isn't a tax, this is something on fire that you have to put out the fire.
Right, but I think over here in this case, they're charging a tax, at least in Mas Mina Batim. I think just for the upkeep of the town or town security. So it is a general tax.
Right, but I'm saying Batim is, you know.
Oh yeah, the Sfina is not, right. The Sfina is not a tax, right? That case, I think you're right, it's definitely not a cost, right? It's not... But I wouldn't say that's a cost, right?
Yeah,
right. There's no cost in the Sfina case, right? It's not like they're building something and then they're imposing it based off of weight. They're saying, what do we get rid of first?
Right. You can kind of do that as a cost. But I'm not so, I don't love that.
Yeah. Hey, Don? Yeah, so there for sure you wouldn't say a higher house is.
Yes,
so we don't know, but right now, let's just focus on the Gorim HaNezek Yoser thing for now. But you're right, that criterion would be inapplicable in a shul building project. But I actually think this is a separate theory. I think it's almost like a Nezek type thing. If you're like a Mazik with other people, you pay in accordance with your contribution to the Nezek, like Shutfin the Nezek. So this is almost like a Nezek-based theory. Imposing a tax. I'm trying to think, are there any good examples of that? You know, you tax people for carbon emissions.
They do, right? It's, and there you're taxing them for the harm that they cause. And I guess you could think of that as, I wouldn't say that that's charging you for the costs, your contribution to the cost. I think there is the
water bills.
What?
Water bills.
Water bills is what?
They're charging based on that water.
Right, that, I think that's probably a cost type thing. What?
I guess it's buying water.
Yeah. You're imagining if it was a tax for water use.
Yeah.
Right, let's not talk about private. Don't talk about private. Let's keep private expenses out of it.
So there's a mask to go over
some of that water. Okay. Okay. Right. So, yeah, that type of mask would be. Gorim Haneza. Right, let's think about it more. Shmuel, do you think Gorim Haneza is different from?
No.
In reality, I think everything's the same.
Well, until I see proven otherwise. I'm still hung up on earlier.
Right. You're not buying any of this.
Yeah, I mean, like, I can see how you approach them differently, but in dollars and cents, if you give someone a carbon emission, yes, you're booking it differently by saying it's a nether, but at the end of the day, it takes $50 to clean up the air.
Right.
It was a cost on the side.
But they're not charging you for their cost, right? Let's say it costs $50 to clean up the air, but they're charging you $1,000 in the carbon tax, right? But you're right.
It's not fair to me that that's what he's describing.
You're saying it would be exactly the... You think about that.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Josh, you have a thought on this?
I'm just wondering how do you know exactly like that bigger house is like gonna be the thing growing bandits in.
Right. How is it that's OSNI
and more? All these things I feel like are too difficult to never actually know what's going on. Unless you sit down the terrorists and the bandits and try to figure out what exactly is there.
It's doable.
Right. Like it could be that you caused bandits to come into Philadelphia and like telling them that your house that you're not going to defend.
I agree that the empirical analysis and all these things gets tricky. I'm just trying to figure out conceptually, are we right contra Romi that Gorim Manezek is different from cost? My intuition is that yes. Yes?
Yeah, maybe just like titling the Yadamash plus cost is full. Like we should say, the Yadamash principle is everyone contributes based off how much the solution costs more to them. Versus here, it's talking about you're generating the problem.
Right.
More. I was like, those are distinct things. I'll
correct.
Money, but like.
So you think if we get a little more fine grained about characterizing the Yadamah not as general costs, of course, you can distinguish the cost of the solution and the.
The severity of the problem.
Yeah, your causal contribution to bringing about the harm.
Yeah, I think you use different words.
Yeah, that's possible. Right, for sure they come apart. The question is, just general classification, is it conceptually distinct enough to be thought of as a separate category? Right? My intuition is yes. Right, that's what I would think. Benji?
I mean, actually, I'm having a tough time distinguishing between the cost and not. Like, let's say New Jersey.
You're in Shmuel's camp now?
I'm just like, let's say in New Jersey, there's like, there's a gas tax, right? It's, that goes to pay for the upkeep of the roads. The assumption is the people that buy most gas are the ones that are
driving
the roads the most, and that they're causing the roads to be repaired. But also, they're driving the most, and they're receiving the most benefit from having the roads be smooth.
What
kind of tax is that? Is that a nezek because like they're the ones that are causing the damage, or is it?
Right, I think we have to consider cases where the damage they cause does not correlate to the benefit they get. Right,
that's like the
to me, it's obvious that those two come apart in a lot of cases.
Carbon tax. I mean, the companies don't get benefit from reducing carbon.
You live in Kansas, and like global warming is not gonna like your city's not getting flooded, but you're like pumping out carbon. So like you're being more messy, but you're not actually losing any on up.
Right. Are you imposing? But the question is different from cost in that case. It's hard to know, right?
Right. Because you're not.
Yeah. Let me think about it. I want to think about this a little more. Everyone should think about this. Let me just get one point. So I want to add another shita here. Did everybody see the Shulchan Aruch in Kuf Samach Gimel? So what does he say? Zacharias, are you nodding your head? So
so it doesn't matter whether it's, you just have other property around that you're posting something up there.
You're managing somebody else's money.
Yeah. So when I read this, I initially thought it was like, it's an Aquarius point. So you want protection of your money. And if you're a double problem on like you, if you're, this other money gets lost.
That's not how the Gemara reads it.
No.
Correct. So the Shulchan Aruch says, when we evaluate Lefi Mamon, it's not just based on your own Mamon, it's also money that you have from somebody else in your rishus. Why should that be? So Zachariah says, you might have thought that it's Ana theory.
Yeah.
But the Gra says no. What does the Gra say?
Yes, so the Gra points to...
This is a great example of the Gra. Just which Makar he cites is very telling. Because which Makar does he cite for this?
The
Sfina case of Makashim Lefi the weight. How is that relevant? So what does he explain?
So it's the factor is not how much mammon you yourself own, it's a factor of how much ayin are you causing.
Right.
So now, since you have a lot of other money here, that's more ayin.
Exactly. So if, I think it's a very interesting case where, of course, your benefit is very little. Your benefit is not so much. Because now your money that's being protected, but you're osa ayin harbe, right? You're the one who's bringing, who's enticing the attackers to come, right? Shmuel, so that's a clear case with the mazik component. The gorim hanezek is certainly different from the hana case. The question is it also different from the cost thing? This example doesn't really help on that front. But what's nice here is that it's not just the Mordechai. The Gra thinks this is implicitly the position of the Shulchan Aruch and also holding somebody responsible with the Mammon when it's not their Mammon. And that's because it's Gore Mayim, even though there's no Hana. You know what I mean?
It's still an interesting assumption, though, because even if like you give me your money and I keep it in my house, it's not really me that being Gore like you should be like, hey,
well, what if it would have been in a different town? Right, so the money, let's say, would have been in somebody else's city.
Like if I call it a tier, even though it's
correct, mm-hmm. Right? Like, why is it? So let's say I borrow your Porsche. Right, let's say you live in Teaneck and I live in Philadelphia, and I borrow your Porsche and I drive it home. Right, and then those car thieves follow me down to Philly and they like steal everyone's cars in the neighborhood. So the thought is like it's not your cost to bear, but I'm the Gore Mayan in that case. And you know, my community could view me as the Gori Manetzek and hold me responsible. And so I think we actually have three separate bases for thinking about a fair way to distribute the burden, either in terms of the costs you impose, that's the certainly the cost you impose for the solution, for the precautions. That's the Yad Armaz theory very explicitly. The Hana, I think that's the theory of most Rishonim in our Sugya, or this idea of Gori Manetzek, which is the theory of the Mordechai and the Gra's interpretation of Shulchan Aruch. Okay, so we had to stop here. Let me just, in the next shiur, Sunday shiur, just want to make small comments on the Rabbeinu Yerucham and the Shud Maharam Padua. Anybody look at those yet? Okay, so we're going to look at those on Sunday. And then why not start Rabbanu Lavayna Tivusa, just to get our feet wet in the Sigya. Or is that not a good idea? I think it's a good idea just to start it. Well, either Sunday or Monday. Do you guys have a preference about Monday? Are you guys busy with finals? Yes? So we can do Sunday last year then? And then hold off on our Rabbanan Bainim Tivusa? Maybe we'll just read the Gemara on our Rabbanan Bainim Tivusa? Is that okay?
It's a different question. I'm having the answer on Monday, but I still would rather not do it on Tuesday, but I mean, here's
my yeah.
But I'm
sharing
personal. Kobe says no share Monday.
That's just what I'm eating, though.
Whatever's better for you guys. I don't want if you guys are busy at finals, it's fine with me. Officially, there's. Let's think about this. Let's do Sunday. Sunday, let's figure out Zoom or in person. Just, I don't know who's around and who's not around. So we'll figure that out on WhatsApp. Let me decide if we should just do Rabbanu Lavayna Tivusa or just save that for next semester. I know Romy has a very strong preference. All right, so we'll stop here.
Oh,
bye, guys.